We continue in our study of Revelation, picking back up with chapter 14, verse 13. Chapter 14, verse 13, as we said, it's going to be one of the more familiar verses. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them. So, with this concept of persecution, even to the point of death, blessed are those who die in the Lord. And you know, along those lines as well, we'll find passages such as Psalm 116, verse 15, which may in a way remind us and bring us back to the concept of death. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of His saints. And so, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. And notice this terminology of dying in the Lord. Well, to die in the Lord, you remember our study of in Christ, in Him, in the Lord. This is one of those places, to die in Jesus. Those who sleep in Jesus, we read in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, to sleep in Jesus, to die in Jesus. There is a blessing. So even though you are to die, context of Revelation, under persecution, you receive the blessing. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, their works follow them. And notice that, rest from their labors in life, their works follow them. It's much like we might think of in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58, actually back up even to verse 57, thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And so their works follow them. You know, we talk about passages such as Matthew 6, 19 through 21. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon the earth, where moth and rust corrupt and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust corrupt and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We start putting passages like this together and we realize you can't take your treasures with you, but you can send them ahead. And in that sense, notice you have Revelation 14, 13, their works follow them. You send them ahead, and in that sense, your works follow you. So, it goes back to passages like we talk about whenever we read about the judgment. And we're going to receive according to the things that we've done in the body, whether good or evil, according to what each of us has done. We'll put 2 Corinthians 5, 10 with passages like Romans 14, 12. Each one shall give account of himself to God. You have these statements that are encouraging. And it's after death, what then? For the faithful child of God, after death, there is a blessing. And then notice chapter 16, verse 15. Chapter 16, verse 15. Behold, I am coming as a thief. Interesting. This whole terminology of a thief, you find in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, the day of the Lord, so comes as a thief in the night. So Jesus' imagery is that He is going to come, but notice that you have His coming is going to be what? It's going to be twofold. It's going to be a blessing for the one who is watching. But that's the same thing, is it not, in 1 Thessalonians 5, concerning the second coming of the Lord. The coming here, of course, is going to be the coming pertaining to the book of Revelation. Jesus is going to come to do the things that He says He's going to do, and He's going to, later on we're going to see really that it's going to be He's coming in judgment on these persecutors. And it's a vindication of His people. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. So you see both a blessing and then this concept of, we recall in Deuteronomy, of the concept of the cursing, because if you are found to be, let's say, spiritually naked, then it's a shameful situation. So you have the blessing that is pronounced upon whom? The one who watches. And isn't it interesting that Paul uses this same kind of terminology? Turn again to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, you have this thief imagery. But then notice what he says, verse 4. So from verse 2, he's going to come as a thief in the night. Verse 4, but you, brothers, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. Verse 5, you are all sons of light, sons of day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us what? Let us watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet the hope of salvation. So, you have this encouragement to watchfulness. And what is this watchfulness all about? It's within this whole context. In chapter 16, don't get caught up in what is going to happen to the evil, wicked people in which God is going to, verse 1 of chapter 16, go and pour out the bowls of the wrath of God on the earth. Don't get caught up in the wrath of God. It's interesting as well. In 1 Thessalonians, since we're talking about 1 Thessalonians 5, previous to that, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 10, you have this clear statement that Jesus is the one who delivers us from the wrath to come. God delivers us through His Son Jesus, through the coming wrath. And in a different context, yet in same kind of similar terminology, you're going to have that Jesus is going to be the one who delivers through all this trial, all this tribulation, and don't get caught up in the things of this world. Because you're going to see, of course, chapter 16:16 here, people talk about and misunderstand this whole battle of Armageddon. And you look at that, there is no battle. They just simply gather together. There is no battle. It's as though, you know, the Hill of Megiddo is what the reference is. It's so decisive that God doesn't even have to fight the battle. There is no battle. God wins. And then, of course, you have verse 19. Now the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nation fell, and great Babylon was remembered before God, to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of His wrath. So you're going to have these blessed statements, and they're in these contexts that you receive a blessing, but evil, wicked people, they're going to receive quite the opposite. You're going to view it as a curse and condemnation. Notice then chapter 19, verse 19, chapter 19, verse 9. Then He said to me, write, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And He said to me, these are the true sayings of God. Well, who are the ones who are welcomed? Those who are welcomed, you find in verse 7, let us be glad and rejoice and give Him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come and His wife has made herself ready. Verse 8, and to her it was given or granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. So an encouragement to be faithful. And you have this blessing for those who have been faithful, because you're not invited to this marriage supper of the Lamb without being faithful. Notice then chapter 20, verse 6. Notice 20, verse 6, another blessed statement. Blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such, the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ and shall reign with Him 1,000 years. And of course, in chapter 20, verse 4, you have this reference to, no doubt, a spiritual reign, because notice who is reigning. The souls of those who had been beheaded. And so it's obviously a spiritual reign. And then in chapter 20, verse 6, look at this again. You know that this is a spiritual resurrection, because you have, they will be priests of God and of Christ and will reign with Him for 1,000 years, to use the New American Standard. And then you have in 22, two statements, verses 7 and verse 14. Notice verse 7, chapter 22, verse 7. Behold, I am coming quickly. And once again, lest we misunderstand this to say, oh, this is His second coming. That's not the context of Revelation here. We're talking about His coming in 1 Thessalonians 5, yes, coming as thief in the night. Here he's talking about the things he's talking about coming and doing is within the context of the book of Revelation. I'm coming quickly. And notice that other statement. You don't have in 1 Thessalonians 5, you don't have anything about Jesus is coming quickly, he's coming soon. We do have that in Revelation. From the perspective of those who received the book, this was going to be a symbolic, figurative coming. And it's interesting that people want to take the coming of Christ as a literal coming and the final coming. And that's a mistake that a good number, I believe, members of the church actually make, is that they want to take this coming as literally instead of approaching it as a symbolic coming, as we approach many other things that are symbolic and figurative. I'm coming, because it is a coming, it is a figurative symbolic coming, but it is a judgment. It is a coming in judgment on the evil, wicked people. But notice, too, it is a coming in which those who are faithful are going to be blessed. Blessed is he who keeps the words of the prophecy of this book, reminding us of exactly what we saw in chapter 1, verse 3. Blessed is he who reads, and those who hear the words of the prophecy of this book and keep those things that are written in it, for the time is near. And so then you have verse 14. Verse 14, blessed are those who do his commandments. And this is going to be King James, New King James. Other translations are going to have, blessed are those who wash their robes. And so you just have the difference of keeping of the commandments versus washing the robes. Of course, you're not going to have your robes washed without the keeping of God's commandments. So it would be the distinction based on your translation of, okay, what is this discussion of washing robes? And if you understand that to mean a reference to immersion into Christ, then those who have come into the kingdom, those who are in Jesus, and obviously they are the ones who have stayed faithful and true, so that keeping his commandments is completely in line with it, that they, notice, may have right to the tree of life. Where is the tree of life now seen? The tree of life is now seen in the presence of God. So that, in essence, to take our minds back to the Garden of Eden, paradise lost is paradise regained, because you're going to have this imagery of the paradise of God was lost through sin. And you're going to see those who engage in persecution and are evil, wicked, sinful people on the earth, they're not going to be granted access to the tree of life. But these individuals will be granted right to the tree of life, because with this whole concept, those who wash their robes, some of the followings, some of your translations follow that, washing of their robes, this is also those who, as you see in chapter 6, who are these? Well, they're the ones who washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. And so, who are these who have right to the tree of life? It does appear that this is going to be perhaps specifically a reference to the martyrs, but it's going to be for all who are faithful and true to God, whether through martyrdom or not. But notice this, may enter in through the gates into the city. Now, what's the city? As we've talked, the city consistently in Revelation is the church. Chapter 11, verse 2, which is trampled underfoot for 42 months. This is the same city that we see that is, you know, coming down from God out of heaven. This city is not, as some have traditionally thought of, as heaven. People say, well, this is to enter into heaven. But if we keep the context of Revelation, these are individuals who, if you follow the reading, wash their robes, then it would be that they have right to the tree of life, not yet have attained, but have right to it, and they've entered in through the gates into the city, being the church. And that may be the proper understanding of chapter 22, verse 14. But it could perhaps be a bit more comprehensive than that as well. But nevertheless, it was a clear statement of encouragement and blessing upon those who are going through persecution to be faithful through all these trials. The fifth key then, the fifth key to help us unlock the book of Revelation is that the book of Revelation identifies the period of the 42 months. Now, as we've stated, it's in close connection to this whole concept of persecution, because we're going to see that the 42 months is going to focus in on a relatively short yet intense period of persecution. So in chapters 11 through 13, we find three different phrases. We're going to find the 42 months, the 1,260 days, and then a time and times and half a time, which is, of course, going to be equal to 3.5 years. So let's look at a few verses here. 42 months, we've mentioned 11 verse 2. Chapter 11 verse 2, to read the whole verse, but leave out the court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. Now, if you take that some people take, that they maintain that the holy city is heaven, if the holy city is heaven, is that what the holy city is here? Is heaven trampled underfoot for 42 months? I don't know of anyone who really takes that approach, that says that heaven is trampled underfoot for 42 months. The general consensus from everything I've been able to tell, people do recognize, at least here, and some say, well, it was the church here, and then the imagery changes so that the holy city becomes heaven. And I don't believe that's within the context, and that's not at all the message. I believe the holy city is going to be consistently a reference to the church, God's people. Notice also chapter 13, verse 5 on this. Chapter 13, verse 5, you have, and he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. And so you're going to have this sea beast who is given charge and authority from the dragon himself, from the devil. And so he has been given this authority to do what? Speaking great things and blasphemies. Verse 6, then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme God, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him, verse 7, to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. So you see that this 42 months is clearly in context of this persecution, and specifically, you even have death of the saints when he makes war with them. And then, of course, you have the holy city these three times in Revelation. So we mentioned 11 verse 2, the holy city that is trampled underfoot. And then if you can remember 11 verse 2, then just change the first one in 11 into a 2, and you get 21 verse 2. And that'll be an easy way to remember the second reference to the holy city in the book of Revelation. 21 verse 2, then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And it's interesting, the identifiers that we have here, so that you can notice that the holy city, if the holy city is the same here as is in 11:2, which I think you have to maintain to be consistent, then you have a reference to the church. Is the church referred to in any other similar terminology as New Jerusalem? And if we look at Hebrews chapter 11, if we look at Hebrews chapter 11, notice Hebrews, actually chapter 12, chapter 12, you're going to have verse 22. Chapter 12, verse 22, but you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels. And so when we read the New Jerusalem in chapter 21, verse 2 of Revelation, is that in any way remotely close, connected to this concept of the heavenly Jerusalem? I believe so. I believe that what we have in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 22, Mount Zion, heavenly Jerusalem, is a reference to the church. And here in chapter 21, verse 2, the New Jerusalem is a reference to the church. And then notice this, coming down out of heaven from God. Now, if this is a discussion of heaven, then is heaven coming down out of heaven? If the holy city, as some maintain, is actually heaven, then is heaven coming out of heaven? So I would actually argue that coming down out of heaven from God, we've already seen imagery of that which comes from below and evil and wicked and not good and not from God. But now something coming from God out of heaven is holy and righteous and true and from God. So that this again is another identifier of the church. And then notice the last identifier. Prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. I don't know anyone who's going to maintain that this is heaven that has been prepared as a bride. So every indication, just as we know in Ephesians 5, that the church is the bride of Christ, you have here that this is also a reference to the church, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And now some would say, well, okay, yes, that's right. This is a reference to the church, but they'll say this is the church in the glorified state. And that's the way they try to harmonize this. But the whole concept is that the church is seen not going into heaven and staying in heaven, is it? This church, this bride, is coming down out of heaven from God. And so what is this terminology then? If we're familiar with Isaiah, this terminology is going to be very similar to the restoration terminology that Isaiah uses. And you'll get into that. We get into that more even with Revelation 21:4. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There'll be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. All things have, yes, become new, verse 5. And so, restoration terminology. God's people, just as in Isaiah, God's people are going to be restored to their homeland. The church was going to be restored and not endlessly persecuted and put to death, but the church would survive. We'll stop there, and we'll pick back up in more of this discussion of the 42 months. We'll see in chapter 3, verse 12, that the holy city is going to be the same as the city of my God in chapter 3, verse 12. But that's the interesting thing, and you know, God has given us enough identifiers to help us understand the message that He wants us to understand. And can you imagine the comfort and the encouragement for these persecuted Christians that when they see this concept and they know that 42 months and 1,260 days and a time, times and a half a time, be intense persecution, they're going to know that it's not going to last indefinitely. And even if I do die in the process of this and I leave this earth, I'm not going to keep going through this. I'm going to rest from my labors. My works follow me. And my brothers and sisters in Christ who do make it through, they're going to be able to continue to do the work of God. We'll stop here. Lord willing, we'll pick back up. If you're here today, if we can help in any of your